Good afternoon, everyone. It is an honor to be in front of you to bring another message here. I would like to start off by reading two short, interesting stories I ran across about two individuals that are attempting to cope with everyday life. So this is the first individual here. I'll kind of read through it fast so we can get to the meat of our subject here. For a few years in my early 20s, it was my job to drink every day, every night, as much as possible. I had other jobs, ones that paid, but those came and went and were just ways of making money, money that I would spend on sea of bottles. I was alone, confused, carrying bad memories from my childhood, memories that ate at the heart in my chest, but would stretch out through my mouth or up into my mind. And if I didn't battle them back with alcohol, there's no way I can keep them down. I didn't have any ambition, any interest in finding my way. Being drunk and sad and alone was my job. And you know what? I didn't hate it. Being lost at sea was my comfort. Sure, some of us may possibly know situations similar or know people that may be in similar situations. That individual, his name was Isaac Fitzgerald. Now, let me do one more short story I want to introduce you to. This person chose to remain anonymous, but here's their short story. When I was studying abroad, I heard that a few of my close family friends had passed away. As I kept getting the news, I found myself starting to feel real empty and genuinely numb to the outside world. I was crying nearly every day and just felt a hopelessness that wouldn't go away. It was strange. It was a strange feeling that I had never felt before. During class, the only thing I can think about was getting back into bed. After a month of dealing with this, I was diagnosed with seasonal depression. And it was really hard because all my friends wanted to go out and would practically make fun because I didn't want to go. I felt embarrassed to tell them what I was going through, and even worse, having to take medication for it. I would get stuck in conversations where people said that depression was just an excuse that people made up, and it's funny because I always questioned people suffering from the same thing. It was really hard and makes you feel even more isolated. It's strange because you begin to distance yourself from everyone. Relationships get really difficult and unbalanced. And I sometimes have off days, but it was true friendships, family, and support that helped me overcome it. Now, what struck me interesting about these two situations is that I found that these two stories, the two individuals were struggling with feelings of hopelessness, depression, and somewhat of defeat. So today, I want to talk and answer the question, why should we have hope? And since we're in this room today, I would like to even extend or magnify that question and ask us, why should the children of God be hopeful? Now, the Webster's Dictionary defines hope as a feeling of expectation and desire for a certain thing to happen. A feeling of expectation and a desire for a certain thing to happen. I also looked up in dictionary.com. It defined hope as the feeling that what is wanted can be had or the events will turn out for the best. I'll read that again. The feeling that what is wanted can be had or that the events will turn out for the best. So that's an interesting definition of the word. A good example of this word in action would be the hope of winning. I'm sure that everyone has experienced that, right? For instance, we can take an athlete, maybe someone who's training for the Olympics. You know, that's an actual four-year course that they have to do a lot of different things to build up to, you know, maybe one meet to where if they qualify, they go on. If they don't qualify, then that 4 years is somewhat been wasted because they did not reach their goal. So you can imagine the type of hope and the desire that builds up during that time period. Let's take another example. Maybe someone that has maybe a bad disease, HIV or AIDS, or someone with a terminal illness. We know that their hope lies in a possible cure for their situation, or somehow they hope and desire to have better health or be in a better situation. Now, to understand this word hope, let's define hopeless, because it is the opposite of hope. I found in dictionary.com, it says, hopeless is the feeling of something is impossible to accomplish, impossible to solve, impossible to resolve, etc. So, and to take it a little further, it's not being able to learn or to act, perform, or work as desired. It's inadequate for the purpose. So we see that hopeless is the total opposite of hope. So I want to take a look at some biblical examples of our ancient spiritual family members, and let's see what examples they have on this topic. Today we will use examples, or an example from the book of Daniel, which is a great book. Daniel was truly used by God to show the Gentile and Jewish nations how powerful and how mighty God was. And if you guys get the opportunity, I strongly suggest you go to the book. It is very good. According to my Nelson New King James Version Bible, Daniel was deported at the age of 16 and handpicked for government service under King Nebuchadnezzar, which was the king of the Babylonian world at that time. And Daniel had impressed King Nebuchadnezzar because God blessed him with certain abilities and certain strengths too. And one in particular, he was able to interpret a dream that King Nebuchadnezzar had when there was no one else, you know, in the whole province or the land that could interpret those dreams. So King Nebuchadnezzar was impressed by Daniel and saw something different about him. Let's turn to Daniel chapter 2 and read a little bit quickly of what took place here. Daniel chapter 2, started verse 46. And I'll kind of read the story a little quick here so we can get to a little more. Then King Nebuchadnezzar fell on his face, prostrate before Daniel, and commanded that they should present an offering and incense to him. The king answered Daniel and said, "Truly, your God is the God of gods, the Lord of kings, and a revealer of secrets, since you could reveal this secret." Then the king promoted Daniel and gave him many great gifts, and made him ruler over the whole province of Babylon, and chief administrator over all the wise men of Babylon. Also, Daniel petitioned the king that he set Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego over the affairs of the province of Babylon. But Daniel sat in the gate of the king, which means he was on the king's court, a very high position that, you know, he was given by the king. So think of it for a minute. He was, you know, a Jewish lad. His land had been taken over by the Babylonians. He was in captivity, but God used him to fulfill a great purpose in that Babylonian system. So just think about the works that God had worked in his life just there. Now, a little later in chapter 3, we see that the king, Nebuchadnezzar, made a massive image of gold. It stood 60 cubits and was width about 6 cubits. So if we can think about this, I did a little bit of research, and it says that 60 cubits is equivalent to 90 feet. So, you know, according to those calculations there, 10 feet is kind of equivalent to a one-story building. We're in a one-story building right now, so just kind of imagine a statue that is 60 cubits or 90 feet. That's about a nine-story building, a lot bigger than a lot of apartment buildings or condominiums or commercial office buildings that we see. So this was a very big, massive, sculpture or image that he had created. And after making this golden image, the king called all his officials there in Babylon, all the administrators, governors, counselors, and judges, all the officials, and they kind of did a dedication ceremony to this image. And let's turn over to Daniel 3 and start at verse 4, and we'll read a little bit about what took place at this point. Then a herald cried aloud, "To you it is commanded, O peoples, nations, and languages, that at the time you hear the sound of the horn, flute, harp, lyre, in symphony with all kinds of music, you shall fall down and worship the gold image that King Nebuchadnezzar has set up. And whoever does not fall down and worship shall be cast immediately into the midst of a fiery furnace." So I'm sure some of us are familiar with this story here, but let's try to take out some points and see, you know, how our ancestors kept hope in this particular instance. Let's drop down to verse 12 and pick up from there. And I'll read through a few scriptures kind of quickly here. Now, this is a point to where Daniel's friends, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, were being accused of not bowing down to this image. And let's see what happened. So verse 12. "There are certain Jews from you who you have set over the affairs of the province of Babylon, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. These men, O king, have not paid due regard to you. They do not serve your gods or worship the gold image which you have set up." Then Nebuchadnezzar, in rage and fury, gave the command to bring them. So they brought these men to the king. And, you know, Nebuchadnezzar asked them, "Why are you not bowing to me? Why are you not worshiping this image that I set? If you guys will not confide, I'm going to have to throw you into this furnace." Let's drop down to verse 16, and let's hear their response to what King Nebuchadnezzar has said after they have been brought in front of, you know, everyone. And they're basically on trial for their life here. Verse 16, "Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego answered and said to the king, 'O Nebuchadnezzar, we have no need to answer you in this matter.'" So they did not want to argue with him. They said, "In this case, our God, whom we serve, is able to deliver us from the burning fiery furnace, and he will deliver us from your hand, O king. But if not, let it be known to you, O king, that we do not serve your gods, nor will we worship the gold image that you have set up." Just kind of further going down the story, I'll tell you a few things. In verse 19, of course, the king was enraged that they still would not confide. So he ordered that the heat on the furnace be turned up 7 times its normal heat. Okay, he was getting ready to throw them in here. Verse 20, he had the army grab them up, bound them, and throw them into the furnace. A little further down, chapter 22, we see that the heat was so massive and powerful that when they attempted to throw Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego into this furnace, they were killed from the heat. Okay, so the three men are inside, but the men, the army, were killed from just attempting to throw them inside. Verse 23, of course, the king is puzzled and he asks his council, "Didn't we just bound these men and throw them into the fiery furnace?" And of course, they answer, "Yes, king, we did." Now, let's pick up in verse 26, chapter 3, and let's continue reading a little bit here. So verse 25. "Look," he answered, "I see 4 men loose, walking in the midst of the fire, and they are not hurt. And the form of the 4th is like the Son of God." And in my Bible here, the Son of God is kind of captioned with the saying that says, "or a son of the gods." So we see here that Nebuchadnezzar noticed that something was totally different and knew that these men had to be blessed or were in the presence of God. Let's read verse 26. "Then Nebuchadnezzar went near the mouth of the burning fiery furnace and spoke, saying, 'Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, servants of the Most High God, come out and come here. And they came out from the midst of the fire, and all the administrators, governors were there, and they saw these men on whom bodies the fire had no power. The hair of their head was not singed, nor were their garments affected, and the smell of fire was not on them. So that's very unexplainable here, but this convinced Nebuchadnezzar that, let's read on in verse 28. Blessed be the God of Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, who sent his angel and delivered his servants who trusted in him. Let's remember that word, who trusted in him and frustrated the king's word and yielded their bodies, that they should not serve nor worship any god except their own. Let's read the definition of hope one more time. Hope is a feeling of expectation and a desire for a certain thing to happen. The feeling that what is wanted to be had or that the events will turn out for the best. So if we just take a minute to think, how would we have done in a situation if we were in their shoes? Would we have been able to hold on to the hope that God would have delivered us? Would we have kept the faith? Or what would we have done? That's an interesting question to think about. To conclude with this message, let us strive to have the same faithfulness, peace, and hope that our brothers did when they were tested. They held on to the hope that God would deliver them from that fiery furnace. Or if not, they still kept the hope that God would see them through, even if they were going to be put to death. Let us hold on tight to the hope of our calling and all the promises that God has blessed us with. Continue to enjoy your Sabbath.